Welcome to the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, the show that features real people, real stories, and real talk. This is the intersection of sexuality and reality. Now, here's the voice of the show, Kyle Ashworth.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Latter Gay Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Ashworth, and excited to have you along for this episode. Today's episode on the Latter Gay Stories Podcast features a gay man who tells his story of coming out, growing up in the church, serving a mission, and sharing experiences from throughout his mission and life and family experiences that help carve him into the person that he is today. It's a lesson of authenticity and honesty and understanding what it takes through this journey to become true to who and what you are. The Latter Gay Stories Podcast is your opportunity to understand the intersection of sexuality and reality as we explore the intersection of LGBT Street and LDS Avenue. It's where religion and sexuality meet, and we discuss those very important topics. The Latter Gay Stories Podcast is made possible through viewers and listeners just like you who make financial donations to help us build bigger and stronger bridges between the LDS and LGBT community. If you want to help us continue the mission of the Latter Gay Stories Podcast, we invite you to make a donation. There are two simple and easy ways of donating. First, by visiting the website at lattergaystories.org and clicking on the Donate tab, or you can simply send us a text. Text the word STORIES to 77948. That's 77948, and your financial donation, whether it's a single one-time donation or monthly donation, even just $5 or $10 a month, helps us build bigger and stronger bridges between the LDS community and the LGBT people. Again, we want to thank you for joining us on this episode. If you are watching through Facebook or YouTube, we invite you to share this episode and make a comment as well. Let us know where you're listening from. And if you're on the audio version through one of our players like Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, tune in or another, welcome to the podcast. We invite you to subscribe to this channel to catch more episodes just like this. With that out of the way, we want to welcome to the podcast, Brock Messenger.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, buddy, how are you?
Good.
Excited to have you here on the podcast because you have a really unique story. Surprise. We all do, right? When you reached out and we were talking about the opportunity to participate in the Latter Gay Stories podcast, I was fascinated because you've got one of those normal Mormon stories, like you served a mission, eventually tried to find that layer of authenticity, and oftentimes when it feels like you're trying to do the right thing, your whole world is falling apart and you're just trying to find who you are. And I think that's the cool part about your story. And I hope to jump into it a little further. So for those who don't know who Brock is, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I guess to paint the picture of who I am, I don't know if it means anything, but just the whole picture. I was born into a Mexican mom and a white dad, and born and raised in Gilbert, Arizona, super Mormon community all the way.
Let's begin with your youth. At what point did you realize I'm different?
Well, I was just watching Aladdin with my family last night, and I realized like halfway through the movie that I was 4 years old when I had first seen that movie, and I was very attracted to Aladdin. So I think that was a good indicator. I didn't know it at the time because I was four, but I guess I've always been attracted to guys.
Aladdin was it, huh?
Yeah.
That was early on, 4 years old.
I would say so, yeah.
From there, let's discuss other times where you started identifying feelings of attraction, maybe I don't know, puberty forward. Let's talk about those times where you just started seeing moments where you recognized, man, my friends see things this way. I feel completely opposite. My friends are talking about this. I don't see that. Do you recall any of those?
I would argue the opposite. Like, I was pretty involved in church, kind of going along with the flow, kind of seeing or feeling that way, but not acknowledging it. I was repressing the feelings, especially all throughout high school. I had a long-term girlfriend all throughout high school, about 4 years.
I think you bring up a good point. So you're being very Mormon, doing all the... Was it... At some point, was there an attempt to try to not give any attention to being gay? Or was that just your nature was that you were really involved in the church?
I was just super involved in the church. It was, you know, blinders on, not thinking about anything else other than the church.
So high school, you get through youth and young men's, post-puberty, what was high school life like? Did you, you weren't out, obviously.
No, I wasn't out.
So you, describe that. Tell us about that experience.
Again, I was super blinders on, focused on the church. I was in the young men's presidency. Like I said, I had a girlfriend study. But even when I was with a girlfriend, I knew I was attracted to guys. Even though I never cheated on her, I was super faithful to her, but I knew I was attracted to men.
How was that wrestle inside of your brain? How did you see, were you creating exit strategies in terms of that relationship? How did that work?
No, I wasn't creating any exit because I felt, you know, being taught in the church that if we were faithful, if we would just pray the gay away, I could marry this girl and we could have a family together and everything would be amazing.
It's exactly what happens normally. Yeah. Nothing odd about that part. So you, did you date her all the way up into your mission through high school? At what point did that relationship end?
Yeah, we kind of trailed off after high school. We were kind of seeing each other, but not super serious because I ended up going for a semester at LDS Business College before my mission. So... we kept in contact, but nothing was super serious. But we still, at least on my side of things, I thought she was going to be waiting for me for when I got back from my mission.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about pre-mission and preparations for your mission. What steps in terms of trying to, were there steps that you were trying to reconcile your sexuality with the prospect of now going on a mission, or was it not forefront enough to even have to worry about it?
I think that I just remained silent because I didn't want to deal with it. I knew that it would be too much heartache to deal with.
Heartache for you, for others?
Mostly let's talk about the heartache. For me? Well, no. Also, I didn't want my parents to know, even though I'm pretty sure that they knew.
Why do you say that?
Well, there was a moment when I was, I don't know, 13, 14, that I was caught in my bedroom with another boy.
So they started putting pieces together.
Yeah, and my mom even saw that I had looked up some gay porn.
All 100% normal.
Right.
Yeah, that's usually part of the journey. And and a very common part of the story for many, not just even returned missionaries, but many in this space.
But it was more difficult back then because you had dial-up.
56K porn.
Yeah. You had to wait line by line for the picture to load.
Oh my gosh. You're getting ready for your mission. Obviously, all this stuff is going on in your world. Were there feelings of inadequacy, unworthiness? What were your ultimate goals prior to serving a mission? What were you hoping to gain?
Well, like I was saying before, my end goal was to marry this girl. And I thought that that was how I could obtain the absolute happiest part of my world. So I didn't feel inadequate. I think I just, like I said, I had my blinders on. I had my eyes to the prize.
Yep. Put in your mission papers and they call you to?
I went, I always am envious of people that went outside the country, but I went to the Santa Rosa, California mission.
Mm-hmm. English speaking, Spanish speaking?
English
speaking?
Yep.
So you are called to the mission.
Mm-hmm.
Provo MTC?
Yep.
When did you serve?
Oh, geez. 2008.
So you serve in California. Let's spend a few minutes talking about your mission. What was that experience like?
It was, as far as I know, how a mission goes. Just working hard and knocking door to door. I really enjoyed it. What I took from my mission is I was able to gain a lot of skills that I didn't have before. Like, first of all, getting over the fear of talking to random strangers and the rejection that you get.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm appreciative of that portion of it. But I felt a little strange about it too.
Let's talk about that. What was strange?
Just more and more, just like, I believe that's when my faith struggle came into play. It seemed more of like I was a door-to-door salesman. And that's when I started thinking about how the church was kind of built, and the structure of it seemed more of a business to me.
And you were an employee?
Yeah.
Pushing it through?
Or a volunteer employee.
True. You were getting paid in blessings, elder.
Yes.
You're starting to have a faith crisis on your mission.
Mm-hmm.
You're having a transition of faith. Did it have anything to do with your sexuality? Just the organization of the church or the historical issues?
No, nothing to do with historic issues. That came later. But just having, I'm sorry to say, hot missionaries in the MTC. And then I didn't have super hot missionaries in my mission, but I mean, just being like around dudes just kind of made me like question even more.
So it was sexuality.
Yeah.
It was your attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Honest. I appreciate you being honest. That, so that experience, how did you begin to merge your, because clearly there was something in your world that said, I don't want to be a disappointment to the church and to my family and to myself as a missionary, yet these things are so real. Mm-hmm. Like this still exists. Let's talk about that territory. How did that work for you?
I don't think there was like a specific thing that like a pivotal moment, other than, is that what you mean?
Yeah, or what processes were going through your mind that you were saying, and I could just be completely speculating, but were there feelings of inadequacy that you were going to let people down, that you were caught in between two worlds, one that wanted to serve a mission and please, but while the other one was just wanting to burst out to say, this is who you really are, like, this is what's going on?
No, to be honest, I don't know much about my feelings in that time period. I fell into a pretty dark place, and I went into a deep depression on my mission. So I kind of just shut off all feelings.
Let's walk into that, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what got you there, and maybe steps into what that space looked like. Because I think that's real and honest, and I think we should talk about it.
Yeah. It was, like I said, the most dark place that I've been in my entire life. Knowing that I would be a disappointment to my parents, and thinking at the time that I'd be a disappointment to myself. I just didn't know what to do. It even came to a place where I was not willing to go out anymore from my mission apartment. I don't know what my companion thought of that, but he knew something was up. I was like deep and dark, did not want to see the light of day. And I ended up reaching out to my mission president. So this was like the first time that I had communication. I didn't say the reasons why, but I was like, I'm feeling way depressed. I need help. And so he ended up having some doctor call me on the phone. We did a little survey, and somehow he just determined to put me on this antidepressant. Never seeing me in his entire life, he just prescribed me something. And I thought that was super odd. So I ended up going forward with taking this prescription, and it actually made things worse.
What increased? What worsened?
I hadn't had any thoughts of suicide until I started taking that.
So your mission president reaches out through Mission Medical, and they put you in touch with a doctor who mm-hmm. prescribes you an antidepressant that then begins to spiral you further.
Mm-hmm.
How far are you into your mission at this point? Is this your first companion?
This was my second companion in the field.
So you're 4 months in or so-ish?
3 to 4 months, yeah.
Yeah. It's not getting any better. Do you reach back out to your mission president? Let's talk about that process.
I realized that I was having these feelings and thoughts, and somewhere inside, maybe the Holy Ghost told me to not take what I was taking anymore.
So you stopped taking the medication. Yeah. You were having suicidal ideation, these thoughts of self-harm, mm-hmm. spiraling depression, mm-hmm. and you stop completely taking the medication that the doctor prescribed.
Yeah.
What happens?
I think that I stayed in that spot for a little bit, because, you know, with antidepressants, it's all the chemistry of your body, and so if you just cut that off, it's not always the best. But I knew that it was making things worse, so I just needed to cut it out.
At some point, you needed to breathe
mm-hmm.
and hit the surface for air. At what point in your mission did that happen?
I think at that moment, I was done with being on the mission. I just didn't know how to leave, because I knew leaving entailed telling my parents, disappointing my family, and like I said, I thought I would be disappointing myself by leaving. So I kind of spiraled into a moment where I didn't give any crap about anything. So to be honest, not to out any of the people on my mission, but they like to go see movies, they like to go shopping when they shouldn't have. So I kind of just like became one of those missionaries that didn't become super focused on what the mission was.
Did you at some point ever confess to your mission president or a companion that there was a bigger or more underlying reason why, or think there were things going on in your world that you hadn't overly disclosed, i.e. your sexuality?
Well, to take a step back, I think the pivotal moment that kind of gave me the last straw was when my high school girlfriend, she wrote me a Dear John.
Oh, no.
So that
antidepressants, moment, already in a terrible spot, and Dear John happens.
Right. So that, at the moment, felt like the most horrible thing that could happen, but now I'm recognizing that as a huge, huge way to prevent like later trauma or drama. So that moment was kind of the moment that I was like, I need to leave. I just need to get out of this mission, because I'm teaching people things that don't quite fit my world. And I know that if I married this woman, I would still be attracted to men. I would still have wants to do things sexually with guys. And so at that moment, I came to a point where I was just in bed like all day, almost every day. Sometimes I wouldn't get up to even eat. I would just get up to maybe take a shower. At that point, I think I'm going a little too forward ahead, but I did end up telling my mission president. I remember I ended up getting put into the same zone as my first mission companion in the field, mm-hmm. Which he's actually from Mesa. So that kind of made me feel more comfortable with him. We kind of connected really, really well. And he, my mission president ended up wanting me to kind of be with him since I felt more comfortable with him. So at the time he was a zone leader, but for this special situation, he knew that I was in need of, I guess, special help. And he put me with that companion again. And I remember one P-Day, we were just hanging out in the stake center, and I was feeling really miserable and just done. I had gotten to that point where I was just ready to go. And so I pulled him aside and I was like, I have same-sex attraction and I can't be here. Like, I don't know what to do. So he had me call my mission president, and we ended up spending probably another week together, but I just wanted to go home.
in those quiet moments where you're discussing same-sex attraction with your companion, and in the interim between, I'm assuming you went and met with your mission president quickly after that. What were those discussions like? What were those discussions with your companion like? I feel like you trusted him. There was some type of a bond there. Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't feel like you just blurted out, like, this is what's going on, get off my back. But you had formed some type of a relationship. Was he compassionate? Was he understanding? Did he get it? Or what was that experience like?
Well, I don't feel like he had any... It was just very, like... You have to remember that this was in my deep depression, so my memory is not as good as what it could have been. But from what I remember, he just told me that I needed to call my mission president. So shortly after, we had to make the hour and a half or 2 hour trip to the mission home.
Your mission president sits you down for an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go through that interview. What was that experience like? Let's talk about feelings, and we don't necessarily have to jump into all the things talked about. The general consent, the general message, I'm sure, was that the president wanted to know what was going on in your world. Mm-hmm. How did that discussion go?
The discussion was pretty vague. I feel like all he wanted to know is if I had fooled around with anyone in the mission, which I hadn't. And it didn't seem like it was from a loving place either.
The interview didn't really help you. But you, seems like you were also determined to go home anyway. Like, that's probably the space you were in.
Yeah, but I was also grasping for, I just didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't want to face my parents at home, and I didn't want to face being the one coming home early from their mission too.
Because that in itself carries a label in Mormonism. Yes. How quickly did your mission president determine it was time to get you a plane ticket and send you home?
It wasn't his decision. I think I pressured that. I think it was maybe a day or two that I just said I was done. I called him up and said I was done. I want to go home.
So you were with your companion, had the president's interview, mission president interview, and then you went back to your area.
Yes.
And then he contacted you that way. Or you contacted him.
Yeah, I contacted him.
And said, I'm ready.
Yep. Said I'm done.
Let's talk about that. The plane ride back to Utah, or Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. What was going on?
I was numb. That was a pretty numb 3 to 4 months of my life.
Not knowing that process, did your mission president allow you to call your parents to inform them? Did he call your family and say, you're coming home? How did that work? What was the informative process for your family to find out what was happening?
I didn't have any contact with them. My mission president took it upon himself to call my parents and tell them why I was coming home.
Okay, that's a good discussion.
Yeah.
How much of that did your mission president disclose, or what did you disclose to your mission president? Did you talk to him about your sexuality?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, I guess obviously he was asking if you're fooling around with other missionaries.
Uh-huh.
So hold up. So your mission president then outs you to your family.
Yep.
Let's talk about that. How did that happen?
I think it's pretty simple. He just told them. It was so fast, like from when I got on the plane to coming home, I was met by my family at the airport, And, you know, you always think of the images that you see on social media of the happy to see you come home from... I remember my family, they all seemed like super depressed that I was home. They had like a half smile on their face because they were happy to see me, but also not. And so that was like a Saturday night. It was pretty late. Actually, it was almost or a little over 10 years ago. And I remember my bishop for my home ward wanted to set up a little get together, like a meeting type of thing at the stake center. And at the time it was like already 9 o'clock, but we all met at the stake center.
And that was, what did your bishop want to discuss?
I'm not sure exactly, but he kind of wanted all of us to share something that we loved about each other. So I feel like that was pretty compassionate.
Did your mission president release you as a missionary? Or did your stake president? Do you remember?
I believe it was my stake president. They left it as a medical release.
Medical, okay.
You know, to kind of soften the blow if I decided to go back. But I knew that I wasn't going to go back.
I mean, the honest truth, you weren't messing around on your mission.
Right.
You were a slothful servant going to movies. Well. Elder. but not something that would justify a dishonorable release from your mission.
But it's also insulting to call it a medical release because being gay is not, it's not a medical ailment.
Correct.
Ailment.
Good point. Great point. So it sounds like your bishop was trying to help, trying to create that experience that will allow you to rebound a little. Your family. Let's talk about family's reaction. Because clearly, walking home from Sky Harbor or driving home from Sky Harbor was interesting. Because there were discussions that you had to have. What were those discussions like?
I wish I could tell you. Like I was saying before, I was super depressed and in a dark state that I don't remember much of the details. I do know that so I'm the oldest of 4 kids. I have a sister that's 3 years younger than me, and then we have a jump down, 12 years younger than me is my sister, and then I have a brother that's 2 years younger than that, so there's a little bit of an age gap there. They were pretty young when I came back. My sister was at BYU Idaho at the time, but I remember there was a period of time where my sister just under me in at BYU Idaho, she wouldn't talk to me.
Do you know why she didn't? She just not know how to approach you? Was it a religious feeling of separation? She ashamed? Disappointed?
I feel like she was. I feel like she didn't have the knowledge of how to talk to someone like this.
I want to talk about your feelings about, and we kind of skipped over this, or maybe went a little too fast, but I want to talk about your feelings of being outed by a mission president to your family. What did that do to your mental health? What did that do to your personal well-being?
It definitely, it hurt. I hadn't dealt with my own feelings first, outside of the environment of the mission. I feel like it would have been better for me to come home in a more normal life to what I thought was normal, and then experience my feelings then instead of being forced to, because like I said, I got home on a Saturday, and then that following Monday I had a counseling session set up for me.
Did the church set that up? Your family set
that up? I believe it was my parents that set it up.
So let's talk about the counseling session. Mental health counseling?
It was a same-sex attraction counselor.
Reparative therapy.
Yes. And he was like one of those guys that had a success story that he was gay or he has same-sex attraction, and he was able to get married and have kids, but it all seemed fake to me.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the therapy. Let's talk about what was that experience like? What were the initial lessons like? What was the program?
I think the one thing that I took from that I was grasping on to hopefully be okay with staying active in the church and moving forward to hopefully being with a woman was they had said that the reason why I had these desires is I needed to have a camaraderie of men, and that I needed, my dad traveled a lot when I was younger, so I kind of like pinpointed on that I didn't have my father figure around all the time, which he is a good dad, but they wanted to pinpoint it on the fact that he wasn't there.
They wanted you to create
throughout the week
an enemy, create a punching bag.
Yeah.
Was this an LDS sponsored therapist? Was your therapist familiar with LDS doctrines? Was he using scriptures and the temple and those ways of trying to help you overcome your SSA?
I don't think it was a church-sponsored counselor, but he was LDS.
So familiar.
Yes.
Familiar with religion. How long did that therapy last?
I think I went for 3 to 4 sessions. And then I ended up deciding that I shouldn't be in my home with my parents anymore, because kind of starting to butt heads. So I decided to apply to another semester at LDSBC.
And was that in the state of Arizona, or was that back up in Utah?
It's in Salt Lake.
I wasn't sure if there was one in Arizona. So you get out of town. Mm-hmm. It was time to skate.
Yeah, I needed to get out of my parents' magnifying glass.
How did it work?
It was good. I needed to get out of the magnifying glass. I think a part of me knew that I wasn't going to continue down the church route, but I knew that that would be one of the only ways that I could get out of the house.
Mm-hmm. Did you use LDS Business College as kind of a little bit of a pawn, still pleasing family, keeping
yes,
it in the church?
Definitely.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That way you could still maintain a foot in both worlds.
Yes.
That makes complete sense. So you take off to Salt Lake, you're still pleasing family, but at the same time, it really does give you the autonomy, the space to start figuring out stuff on your own terms instead of somebody else.
But my feelings were still there. My depression was still there. So I tried hard. I wanted to further myself in schooling and college and hopefully get myself into a nice career. But I the depression, like I said, was alive and well.
So let's talk about school. Do you move in with friends? Do brand new roommates? What was that living situation like?
I stayed. LDSBC has some dorms, just like across the street from Temple Square.
So shared housing.
Yeah. I tried to have a roommate, but it worked out that I had the place to myself pretty much.
other people in the building, people that you went to school with, did you come out?
No, I didn't come out. I was pretty quiet. I tried to make friends. Even in classmates, I didn't connect with anyone, probably because I had this cloud of depression over me.
Mm-hmm. At what point did things start to get better?
Better.
Where?
I'd say not for a while.
Where the clouds started to disappear a little bit. Or, I mean, is there a part of the story before we rush to where sunlight finally starts busting through? Were there significant parts of the story that you want to talk about?
I ended up having to withdraw from LDSB Business College because of the depression. I ended up moving in with some family for a little bit, tried to hold a job together. I was having a hard time holding on to a job, honestly, because of that depression, and I did not have a will to do anything. I was swiping my credit card left and right to try to keep myself independent. I ended up getting myself into quite a bit of debt. Came to a point where I maxed out my credit card, and then I had to call home, ask if I could come back to Arizona.
Mom, dad, family.
It was my mom. I was like, hey, I know you're at Lake Powell. Do you mind coming up 5 hours to come pick me up? Because at that point, they had taken away the car that they let me use as well.
So you move home.
Yep. Back at home again.
How is that? That's got to be...
It was to be as expected. I still was battling depression. I finally found something that would kind of level out my depression, prescription-wise. And then found a steady job, started meeting some friends. That was the point where you didn't have Grindr or anything like that. You just had good old Craigslist.
Craigslist.
Yes.
So 56K is gone, and we start getting DSL.
Yeah.
So, or T1. that's a little better in your world. That was kind of the next part I was going to start leading into was, where did your activity rate in the church go?
I had dropped going to church while I was still at LDSBC.
So you stop activity in the church. Your mental health starts getting better. Probably not completely attributed to not going to church. Maybe had a factor, but more importantly, they get you stabilized. They get you on medication, and that starts working for you.
Yeah.
And also maybe the power of friendship and those experiences. But you're now at Craigslist.
Yes. So I'm a super innocent 20-something-year-old Mormon. I considered myself Mormon still at the time. Posting a Craigslist. I didn't know Craigslist was used for more of hookups.
It is? I thought it was just to sell your items.
Well, on the man for man thing, it's but I post something like, I'm Mormon, trying to figure out my feelings sort of situation. Nobody responded at all. I just wanted to know that I was not alone, because at the time, like, this was 10 or 11 years ago, it was a whole different world back then. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that I was not the only one in the world that was Mormon and gay. So I had one of my friends, which is still a good friend of mine, he reached out to me on Craigslist and we went on a date.
You didn't know him prior?
Just
met him on Craigslist.
Mm-hmm.
He responded to your I'm confused ad.
Yeah.
What about it was interesting to him? Was he also a member of the church?
Yeah, he was actually active at the time. Returned missionary. He had served the full time. Yeah.
He too was in the same boat, probably.
Yeah.
Looking for that same validation. I'm not broken. I'm not alone. And there's got to be something more out there for me. Where's my herd?
Right.
Where's my group of people?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that had a contributing factor to your finally turning the corner and becoming better?
Definitely.
Let's talk about that. What was so important about having a friend?
Well, just like I had said, up until that moment, I thought I was the only one in the world that had this situation. And then he's more of a social person, so he also had other people that he had, other friends in the same situation, and just kind of spiraled into that whole group. Also, another struggle of mine was I've always been into cars. I've always been into, like, I guess, manly things, which weren't always attributed to the gay world.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that made me click to him was that we both like cars. I was like, well, how can you like cars and be gay at the same time? That was so, like, weird to me. A whole new world.
Okay, Aladdin. Your friendship continues. Your mental health is getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You're still flirting on the sites. Where does your world go from there?
Kind of just explored. I knew that I wasn't too into the gay scene of, like, clubbing or things like that, but I kind of just explored it to see what it was like. I turned 21 and dabbled in drinking a little bit, seeing the things that I had been missing.
What was your family's reaction? Were you doing this in the dark of night? Were they aware of what was going on? Were you open about what was going on? That you were meeting people, that you were drinking?
No, I wasn't open. I know that they probably assumed that I was getting into things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It started getting to the point where I was staying out until, like, when the bars were closing, coming home at like 2:30 in the morning, and that's when my parents decided to come up with a contract for me to live in their home.
The curfew contract.
A curfew and terms contract of living with them under their roof.
What were some of the highlights of the contract?
I think it got to the point, I think this is the second contract that they had given me, but they basically gave me, I think, 6 months to live with them, and then maybe, like, renew the contract. It was a curfew, which was kind of, I mean, looking back on it now, nothing good really happens after midnight anyway. So
the Holy Ghost goes to bed at midnight.
So I'm okay with a 12 o'clock curfew here at 31 years old. But back then, you know, you're still wanting to hang out with friends. And but I ended up not following through with the contract, so they ended up giving me an ultimatum that I needed to start looking outside of the house.
How did that go? Were you in a good enough space that it was time, that you're okay with moving on? Because I think shockers, spoiler, you moved out.
Right.
How did that go for you?
I think it was time. I was just needing to have a more safe space for me. So I ended up finding some roommates and renting out just a room from a house.
Mm-hmm. At this point, you're out?
Yeah. I never had like a glitter party and, you know, announcing to social media that I'm gay.
You're like spreading motor oil all over the driveway. Yeah. Like, I'm gay.
No.
Oh, okay.
Nope. I never saw the need to do that.
Understandable. You actually bring up a really great point. In all of the many, many interviews that I've done, I don't know that there's a single coming out story that is consistent, that it doesn't necessarily require glitter and rainbows to come out in this world. But often it's matches your personality,
right?
Which is there's such a variety, which mm-hmm. is important. Mm-hmm. That there are some people who hide their sexuality and avoid coming out because they don't fit the stereotypical idea of what it looks like to be gay, and that's okay too. Mm-hmm. There are many versions of sexuality, and I think we need to own that and realize that. Just like you said, you didn't feel like you were part of the scene. You didn't feel like you were that you matched well with many people because you just didn't fit in to a what society would call stereotypical gay.
Right. And you also have to remember that 10 plus years ago, all the gays that were portrayed on television were ultra flamboyant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you didn't ever see a gay that liked cars or camping or, you know, things like that. So
yeah, they were all dressing up houses for Move That Bus,
right? Or which I like to do that too.
Yeah,
but
got it. Yeah, so you're out, your mental health's doing much better,
right?
But you're single. What happens? How do you fix this?
Well, I ended up dating someone for a few years. I was single for several years as well before that. And then things didn't move forward with that person because he didn't really want a family life, and kids. And I really knew that I wanted kids. So just didn't end up going through with him.
So do you begin dating? Where are you hunting down people as prospects?
At that point, I just was dating for fun. I wasn't really wanting a relationship because I was still trying to get over the breakup. In all honesty, safely hooking up with other guys, and I was on Grindr.
So, affectionately known in the gay world, you're hitting another whore phase.
Yeah, that was my whore phase for sure.
You were sowing oats, looking for friends.
Yes.
Getting to know people.
Friends with benefits.
Grindr, the Facebook for gays.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it was fine, but it's honestly stressful to be on Grindr. It's like such a pain. Until I got a message from someone.
Oh, do tell.
His name was Thomas, and I guess there was something wrong with his car window. And he saw on my profile that I was a car guy, and he asked me if I knew anything or how to fix a car window. So we ended up setting up a time for him to come over. And we took apart his door and noticed that his window regulator needed to be swapped out, and that was the first date of my now husband.
It was love at first roll-up window.
Yes.
That's amazing, Brock. I love the story. Like, that's awesome. The guy shows up to get his car fixed for free.
No, he took me out. He bought my dinner that night.
Okay, so. Good. I was going to say, there better be a, if I'm going to fix your window, you're taking me to dinner.
Yeah, for sure.
He takes you to dinner and you're head over heels.
Yeah.
Immediately? Or you think, no, I kind of like this guy?
There is a strong connection. Like, we even, like, handed over each other's phones, unlocked, and, like, pictures, whatever. We were scrolling through everything. We were, like, very open with each other. And I'm not just about to hand over my phone to anyone, so we definitely felt a connection.
There was a connection. How long before you start exclusively dating? How does that world work? I mean,
I think
Napoleon Dynamite at this point is saying things are starting to look pretty serious.
Well, I think we still had a couple guys that we were each talking to still. But after a few months, I sat him down and I was like, hey, I kind of want to determine the relationship.
And he was all in. Let's talk about it. So you're dating, you meet on Grindr, and you did say the H word. So at some point you become husband.
Yes. So we dated for about a year. And we kind of just, there was an official engagement, but I just, like, we had been talking about it before, possibly getting married. So we set a date, and that was interesting because my family was, or my parents in particular, were still kind of on the fence, I feel. And I didn't want that day to be about them. I wanted it to be about us and love. So, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know if this was the right decision or not, but I didn't invite them. We kept it pretty much Thomas and I and the kids.
In a lot of circumstances, I see the importance of keeping parents out of some of those intimate experiences because sometimes it's about you. Sometimes it's about what you're building, and I can understand that. But what about other family members?
I did have the support of my dad's mom, my grandma. She didn't understand it exactly, but you could tell that she was very loving. But I had always been close to her. So I had her and my two younger siblings. They've always been there for me.
What's your advice? What do you want people to know who listen to this podcast? Ultimately, if you say, here's my message. Here's what I sat down for this interview today because I want to tell the listening audience this. What would be the answer to that question?
I feel like if I would have married my high school girlfriend, there would have always been a pit in my stomach, knowing that it wasn't what I wanted. And now that I'm with the person that I want to be with, like, it feels like that empty place is full. And I wouldn't have been able to feel that way if I wouldn't have gone through what I've been through.
What was the cost, the price of authenticity?
Definitely not easy. It's honestly still not 100% easy when it comes to my family. But it is worth it.
What's your message to the closeted young man or woman, or old man or woman, or married man or woman who's listening to this podcast, what advice do you have to them?
Not only them, but everyone should just be true to themselves as long as they're not hurting anyone physically.
Be yourself and find joy in that journey.
Yes.
You're happy?
I am.
I can see. Brock, thanks for sitting down with us.
Thank you.
It's like the fastest hour in television. That was a quick interview. At least I think it felt like it was. Any last and final words? Anything we missed you wanted to talk about?
I do have something. An ode to my sister. When I had first talked about, or first come to realization that I needed to be true to myself, I got my first tattoo, which was hold my hand on my wrist. Just because in those dark moments, I knew that I didn't have anyone and I wanted to be there for someone in the future. So my sister, she had come out to me. She's gay. She came out to me like a year and a half ago, and it's something that we've been able to bond over and be there for each other. And now she got the same matching tattoo as me, and I'm sure she's gonna be there for someone in the future. So I feel like even at your darkest moments, maybe don't think about yourself. Think about someone in the future that you can help out.
Great advice. Dude, thank you. I appreciate this interview. I like it.
I'm glad to do it.
I like the raw, candid, hard discussion. That this journey isn't always about roses and easy trails. But I think your story is evidence alone. I really think your story can help people move forward.
I hope so.
And find the ability to move on and see that happiness does come.
It does.
And there is always a human out there waiting for you.
Yeah.
Whether or not their window is broken.
Right.
On or off grinder.
Exactly.
Love finds its way through many venues. Brock, thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. This is another episode of Latter-Gay Stories podcast. Exciting and touching episode. I appreciate you following along with us. If you have questions for Brock or want to comment on this episode and you're watching on a video version, comment below. I'd love to join in the conversation and see what you thought about this episode. And if it meant something to you, share it. Share it with your friends and family and let's have a discussion about this topic. You know, we discussed a lot today about mental health and depression, suicidal ideation, the power of friendship, and the very difficult parts of this journey. If that means something to you, and if you understand that, we invite you to join in the discussion, and let's see what we can do to become better and to help those around us that not only struggle, but also those who have moved forward and succeeded in this journey. If you are watching on our video versions, we invite you to share and like wherever you're finding this podcast, especially if you're on our YouTube channel. We invite you to subscribe to this channel where you will be updated and informed every time we release a new episode. The Latter-Gay Stories podcast is your opportunity to inspect the intersection of sexuality and reality, but most importantly, it is your chance to continue writing your Latter-Gay story.
This episode is a production of Latter-Gay Stories. We are always looking for new friends. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Latter-Gay Stories. The podcast is made possible because of generous donors like you. Make a donation now by texting the word STORIES to 77948. Your donation gives us the ability to build bigger bridges by producing more Latter-Gay Stories. Want more? Find this episode and others online at LatterGayStories.org.